And I like to think of my job as a job that I, first of all, enjoy very much in serving people in this area. They called me a plan giving consultant. I'm a full-time NAV staff member in my eighth year with the Navigators. Served in the pastorate for 5 years also along the way. We do a lot of thinking in about our responsibility with respect to stewardship, management, and so on. And I think most of us probably realize, well, everything that we are and we have belongs to the Lord. And we think, I think most of us do a good job about planning income and expenditures. How do we handle the money, the paycheck? How do we give to the Lord's work? And we've got things pretty well figured out. And let me use four words to kind of share what I'm getting at here. First of all is creation. Second is accumulation. And we're talking about now property. We're talking about stewardship. We're talking about the fact that we've been entrusted with something to manage on behalf of the Lord. And the other two words are conservation. And the other word is distribution. And I feel that we do a pretty good job here, by and large, most Christians, about creating and accumulating. And you know, it's not wrong to be rich. As Skip Gray was saying to our Southern Division a couple of days ago, some of our couples there, the sin isn't in being rich. There's lots of rich people in the Bible. The sin is in the mismanagement of property. And this is the area that I really am working in as much as possible with our people. The conservation and distribution in the best interest of our family and the Lord's work. Now, I like to think in terms of property settlement or distributing property, if we can talk about that for a minute, in terms of three words. First of all, everything you have will be distributed by one of these three forms. It'll fall into one of these categories. If you don't have any will and you haven't made any contract, now let's use Alvin's case. If Alvin didn't have any kind of an agreement, no will made out, no agreement, and in fact he and his and Lance did go down in an airplane, something happened to them, the state of California would say, okay, Alvin Smith and Joy Smith, we distribute your property according to the laws of the state of California. We call them laws of descent and distribution. Do we have an attorney here this morning? Many of our conferences have attorneys, and I always try to utilize an attorney because they're the final authority in what I'm saying, and I'm generalizing. I'm not trying to give legal advice because I can't practice law. So these are what we call the laws of intestate succession. What happens to Smith's property is made out according to the laws of the state of California. There are about 50 different sets of laws, too. The contract is another form of property distribution. I say to Prudential Life Insurance, I'll pay you $10 a month if you'll pay my wife $10,000 upon my death. I make a contract where my wife and I own a home here in Colorado Springs, and it says John or Patty or John and Patty Watts with rights of survivorship, so that if I die, the property passes to her immediately. I make out another contract, could be a form of a trust agreement, which we don't even talk about here. Either a, what we call a testamentary trust, which is a trust created in a will, or an inter vivos or living trust, which is a trust created in effect today. That's a contract with somebody. And property passes on your death according to that contract. Then the will. And somebody said a will is an instrument that most economically controls the disposition of your property at death. And that's what a will does, most economically controls the disposition of your property at death. And that's the area that I'd like to concentrate on with you today. And I'd like to have plenty of time for us to have some questions and answers after I reach a certain point. Let me share a couple of verses of Scripture with you along this line, and then we'll take a look at a film strip presentation that's exactly 12 minutes in length entitled The State Has Made Your Will, and you'll see what happens when you die without a will. First of all, if you'd write down four verses of Scripture. One is 1 Timothy 5:8, and let me give it to you out of the Living Letters. But anyone who won't care for his own relatives when they need help, especially those living in his own family, has no right to say he is a Christian. Such a person is worse than the heathen. Secondly, another passage that I feel is real value here is Genesis 41. And here is the passage where Joseph was planning during the seven good years for the seven lean years to come. It was real planning on his part. There wasn't any mistake about it. He planned during those seven good years. Most of us feel before the Lord that we have a certain standard of living as far as the food and the house and the other things that we have provision. Well, we feel that we can live on a certain figure there. And somebody has diagrammed this standard of living through life is going like this. We have, first of all, here's the standard of living or what we feel the Lord wants us to live on. And here in the school years is what we call the learning phase, where our earnings are below the standard of living that we feel the Lord wants us to live on. And then we come along here into what we call the earning phase, where many times we have an income that's above our standard of living, and we apply a little law called the expenses rise to meet the income. And then we get into what we call the yearning phase. And this is something that Joseph foresaw for a different reason than age. He just foresaw it. The Lord gave him the vision there in the Genesis passage. But what all of us see is that we approach this passage down here. And the idea of planning, any kind of planning, is to lop off a little here, you see, and transfer it down here to bring it up to that point. And somebody has once said that it's not the high cost of living that gets to us. It's the high cost of high living. And that's a real problem. By the way, let me just say something else here, too, that I feel the best thing, if I carefully usually avoid the word estate planning because it isn't a term that's well received and well understood. But the best little bit of planning that we can do as parents for our youngins is to help them, first of all, I think there are two major points here. First of all, help them gain an earning capacity. Of course, we're in the process of this educational business at home. We're bringing them up in the fear and admonition of the Lord, to walk with the Lord, and so on. And as they leave the nest, if we can give them the ability to be able to go out and be in a tent-making pursuit like the Apostle Paul, to be able to earn their way, whether it involves a college education or a vocational education or whatever training you wish to pass along, that's a far greater favor than leaving them a pot of gold. In fact, if you leave them a pot of gold, the chances are it'll be a bad deal. I can give you plenty of examples of that. The second thing is, if you can provide over here, you can use whatever word you want to describe that, but if you can make adequate provision here in your planning, living by faith today for tomorrow, and exercising and putting together whatever you feel God wants you to do, to maintain your life in the retirement years, you do Junior the second best favor. And that is you plan for the future income for you and your wife, the two of you, so Junior doesn't have to pick up the tab over here. Those are the two best things I think we can do for our children by way of planning for the future. Now, two other verses of Scripture, Proverbs 21:20. Ken Taylor, in his Words of Wisdom, says, "The wise man saves for the future, but the foolish man spends everything he gets." That's Proverbs 21:20. The wise man saves for the future, but the foolish man spends everything he gets. And then Hezekiah, when he was very ill, Isaiah said to Hezekiah, 2 Kings chapter 20 and verse 1, "Set thine house in order, for thou shalt surely die." 2 Kings 20 and verse 1. Now, if somebody could flip off that light, we'll look at this. And I want you to, so much that's done in this field is done so heavy and so, you know, I have to yawn through another meeting. This is done intentionally in a lighthearted manner. I guess we got something else that needs to come off up there. There we go. So don't be afraid to laugh. You'll see lots of funny parts right at the outset. It's made lighthearted, but it's made to get the point across that you and I need to be careful that we've made some planning for the future. Now, let's see, I can sit right here. And I want to make sure that you all will hear this. Let's see, switch Okay, now we're in good shape. I want to make sure you all hear this.
This is Andy Average, an average American citizen. This is his average wife, Abby. These are his 2.5 average children and his average dog. He also has an average house with an average mortgage.
Can you all hear that?
And the usual 2 average cars. And being an average citizen, Andy does not have a will. Over half the adult population does not. Why don't you have a will, Andy?
Why? Well, you know how it is. You're gonna get one of these days. Well, it's just, I'm so busy, you know.
And Abby Average, being an average wife, sometimes nags him about it.
Andy, it says here that every man should have a will. Do you have one yet? Why not? Shouldn't you? Well, speak up. Yay.
Well, Andy, we have good news for you.
You do?
Yes. You no longer need to worry about writing your will.
I don't?
Nope. You now have a will.
He does?
Yes. It's all written, signed, sealed, and delivered. Completely legal.
Where did it come from?
The state has made your will.
The state?
Yep, they had to. You see, they just couldn't wait any longer for you and all those other guys to get around to doing it yourselves. Too many of you are dying off before you do it. More than half the people who die every week have no will. Over $100 million goes through probate courts every week without benefit of a will. So the state had to write one to cover the situation.
And they've really written a will just for Andy?
No, not just for him. For everyone.
You mean one will for everyone?
Yep, of course. It isn't really a will like the kind you might write. It's actually a body of laws telling what to do with a person's estate when he or she dies without a will. Officially, they're called the laws of descent and distribution.
But how does the state know what I want done with my money and my property after I die?
Well, they don't. They have to make a guess. But you know, most people want pretty much the same thing. It's just common sense. So let's just assume that the state laws on wills are commonsensical, even though they're long and complicated and have many changes every year and are somewhat different in each of the 50 different states.
They're all different, you say?
Yes, you know how the states are. Same way with most of their other laws, too, but they usually fit most situations more or less. What would you want done with your property, Andy, if you died suddenly next week?
Well, I guess I just want to all go to my wife.
Thank you, dear.
What about your children?
Oh, she'd take care of them, as usual.
Sure I would.
You'd trust her to do that, Andy?
Of course.
Gee, that's too bad. The state does not.
They don't?
Nope. Oh, they might trust you, Abby. I mean, they'd want to. But what about that irresponsible woman down the street? The law has to fit her, too. So the state's will, the one they've made for Andy, takes a big chunk out of his estate and puts it in trust for the children. They can't touch it until they're 21 years old, and neither can you, Abby.
But how does she raise them? How does she pay for their food and their clothes and doctor bills and college?
Oh, well, if she needs money for that, she can go to court and ask the judge to provide some out of their share. He might do it. She would probably have to go back to court every time she needed money for emergencies.
That's outrageous.
Of course, there's one situation that avoids that problem entirely.
What's that?
That's if you and Abby should be killed simultaneously. It's more and more common nowadays, unfortunately, with auto and airplane accidents and such.
Goodness. If we were both killed, who'd take care of the children?
Who, indeed? If you had your own personal wills, you'd provide for that, of course. You'd think about your various relatives and probably pick a couple about your own age, a brother or sister, a husband or wife, and have an understanding with them that if such a tragedy occurred, they'd raise your children or you'd raise theirs. But since you don't have your own will, the state's will has to cover it.
What does it say?
Well, most states leave it up to the probate judge. He would probably just pick your nearest relative or your wife.
Oh, I hope not. I mean, well, in our family, some of the relatives wouldn't do too well as substitute parents, if you know what I mean. I have a sister, for instance. Well, I just wouldn't...
Yeah, then there's my older brother. Wow.
Yes, lots of people have a few relatives like that. Many people have stronger bonds with friends. And speaking of bonds...
Yes?
I assume you would not want Abby to have to post a bond in order to handle your estate.
Certainly not.
That's too bad. The state does require it.
But why?
To protect the property from irresponsible management. You're sensible, of course, Abby, but some men's wives might be careless. So the state has to take all precautions.
But where does the money come from?
Right out of your estate.
Wouldn't it be put back later, after the judge is satisfied that I am responsible and capable?
No, it's never put back. It's like an insurance premium. It pays for the protection. So your estate is depleted permanently by the cost of the bond. Why deplete the estate unnecessarily? It makes an extra problem for your executor. Who would you want as your executor, Andy?
Oh, my friend Walt. He's a solid businessman, you know. Very capable and a really close friend.
That's too bad. The state probably has a different idea.
Really?
Yes, when a person dies without a will, most states leave it up to the judge to name an administrator, and many judges name the nearest relative. It's not likely the judge would name Walt unless Abby made an extra special plea for him. Too bad, too, because Walt knows a lot about settling estates, taxes, and such.
Taxes?
Oh, sorry about that. I know it's a dirty word. But there are estate taxes, you know, and your attitude toward them is probably different from the state's.
How so?
Well, you are a taxpayer, so you probably are not very fond of taxes.
You can say that again.
While the government is a tax receiver and just naturally loves taxes. So a state-made will may give the government more taxes out of your estate. Writing your own individual will may save more on taxes alone than the modest cost of the attorney's fee for making your will. By the way, do you have any special items of property you'd want to leave to particular individuals, like antiques or books or jewelry or such?
Oh, yes. There are several such items that Abby and I want to leave to certain people.
Well, that's another thing a state-made will cannot cover, unless the people are your nearest relatives who know your wishes and are in total harmony with them and with each other. How about charitable bequests?
Oh, yes. We've supported several worthy causes and institutions for years, and they'll miss our support after we're gone.
Yes, we'd want to leave bequests to several organizations.
Well, that's another thing your state-made will cannot do, obviously.
Say, I don't think this will the state has made for me is so hot after all.
Maybe not. It's hard to write one all-purpose blanket will to cover millions of people, you know.
But does it have to be that complicated and incomplete? Why so much red tape? Are all those obstacles and procedures really necessary?
It's like locks on doors. Most people are not crooks, but some are. So we all have to suffer the inconvenience of carrying keys and using locks.
Okay, I understand. But I'd say that state-made will fits me about like a tattered horse blanket on a Siamese cat.
Meow.
I'm going to call my attorney tomorrow and make an appointment to make a proper will for me.
Just for you?
Well, really, for your benefit, dear. And you'd better have a will of your own, too.
Really?
That's right, Abby. A wife needs a will, too, for the same reasons a husband does, plus some additional reasons. Your will should complement and reinforce Andy's and carry the distribution of your property a step or two further.
All we're thinking of is your own good, Abby. Yours and the children's.
Oh, Andy, you say the sweetest things. Now I can stop nagging. But don't forget to wear your rubbers tomorrow. And drive carefully. And remember your dental appointment next Wednesday.
Now, how about you? Have you made your will? If not, why not make an appointment today to see your own lawyer? Then you will be way above average.
Thank you very much. Do you see the switch on that? Thank you. I think it goes down maybe halfway and then the fan stays on. Yeah, it should stay on for a couple minutes. We are about 15 minutes or 20 minutes below what I like to take as a minimum for this, so let me kind of hastily go along, and I'm going to mention something to you that I don't think you need to bother to write it down, but I'm just going to share this, and then we'll move on to something that I think will be real useful to you, and we'll invite your questions at any time. I just want to tell you quickly some of the reasons that people don't make wills, and one of them is a reluctance to face death. People often say, well, the minute I make my will, then that must be about it. You know, they have the feeling that this is it. And, of course, this comes from an incorrect concept of death in the first place. If we look at the Apostle Paul again and see his attitude toward death and coming into the presence of the Lord and so on, we get a whole different viewpoint. Procrastination, what's the hurry? I'm young, I'm healthy. All of us know somebody, you know, who's had a premature calling home. And so we really never know the timing in our individual situations. Thirdly, is too little property. As Elvin said, sometimes you're worth more monetarily dead than you are alive. There can be lawsuits that come up as a result of an accident and so on. Or simply, if you want to be able to dispose of the property you feel God has given you to manage now, you feel you should dispose of according to His will, and the Lord has given you some ideas, then what you do have is important. Then a fourth thing is too expensive. A lot of people feel, it's just too much money. I hear these attorneys, they just get such exorbitant fees, it's impossible. A will, a simple will without any kind of a trust involved in it, will cost anywhere from $15 to $50 per individual. In some states, there are statutes that dictate a larger fee, but most of the attorneys, I don't believe, practice that, what the state bar requests along that line. Colorado is an example of that. The minimum fee here is $75, and I don't think most of them follow that idea. But you'll find that it's, and I find people asking me the question all the time, well, why couldn't we just write our own? Well, that's called a holographic will. And a personally handwritten holographic will is illegal in 30 of the 50 states. And a lot of people tackle this and put things kind of down in writing. Well, the judge will look at that, and he'll read it, and he'll say, well, this is what Mrs. Jones wanted to do. Well, that's too bad. It isn't really, it doesn't meet the statutes of that state. Now, you can type out your own will and have it witnessed. And as long as you are meeting the laws of the state, we'll say of Kansas, if you come from Kansas, and you had that witnessed accordingly and dated properly and all of those things were done right, then okay, they'd admit it to probate and they'd follow it as your wishes. But you're taking too much of a risk. It isn't worth saving $50 to try and do this. Another reason people don't make wills is they dislike legal documents, and of course there's no reason really for that. Sixth, the lack of ability to plan for the future, and all of us share that problem, but it doesn't remove the necessity for us to sit down and think through the future a little bit, and to think through what we have and what our responsibility before the Lord is for those for whom God has given us a responsibility, not just for children, by the way, but for parents too. And a reluctance to place confidence in others is another reason that people don't make wills. And this may be the biggest reason. Who is the attorney I can go to? Who can I trust? Well, you simply have to work on this and research, and it is. It's a job to work at it, to find businessmen in your church who will say, well, I use thus and so attorney. I found him very, very reasonable, and he knows how to do the job. And pretty soon one name begins to click as it comes to you, and you inquire of businessmen or people in your church, and you find somebody that, well, this is the one I think I should go to. All right, let's, now at any time here, you can pop in with a question. I want to cover some of the things. I think you've seen pretty well here in this film strip what happens when you die without a will. Let me just expand on one or two of those points. Probably the most earth-shattering is the fact that in many states, from one-fifth to one-half of the estate upon my death, from one-fifth to one-half would go to my wife and the balance to the children. And that's the part that is really shatters us, because we think, well, if I die without a will, Patty will get everything and she'll manage and take care of the children, and that ain't the case. It's true in some states that it's well taken care of, even by the intestate laws. But in many instances, it is not. And I'll tell you where it's a particularly dangerous situation is where you are married and don't have any children. And then one-fifth to one-half may go to the wife, and the balance to parents, brothers, sisters, all kinds of people that you might have wanted to remember some of them in your will, but it wouldn't maybe be in the proportion that the state has decided to remember them in your will. And then, of course, other problems that have already been magnified here is the fact that you pay them. If there are taxes to be paid in your estate, and this is another subject we really don't cover in this workshop, but you could ask me about later. If there are taxes to be paid, you'll pay the maximum through an intestate transfer of property, that is, a transfer of property without the will. And then, of course, you'll pay a bond, which can get expensive. You'll have an administrator, that's the term we use for the court appointing somebody to take care of your things. If you name somebody in your will, it's called an executor or executrix. If the court appoints it, it's an administrator. And it may not be somebody that is competent, usually it will, but it may not be somebody that you would be your choosing. My father died, didn't change his executor, and his executor was not qualified to serve. So the court-appointed administrator that has done a horrendous, horrible job. It's just unbelievable. I'm learning just by watching this go through. Yes?
Well, why does one have to have an executor or an administrator?
Well, this is the person that is the one that was given in the image here a little bit of having the business ability to settle financial affairs, to handle the accounting up of the things that you leave and the proper distribution. The executor really executes what you've written down. In other words, you sit down with that executor and you say, now here it is in writing. This is what I want done with my children. We'll get to the guardian point in a minute. And this is what I want done with the things I'm leaving and with the insurance proceeds if they happen to be payable to your estate rather than to some individual. And so that person sees that those things are carried out and accounts to the court for it. Yes?
Why wouldn't an executor that is appointed in will be eligible?
Well, in my father's case, he was elected to public office. And this was one of the reasons that made him ineligible. Another thing would be, I'll tell you what a lot of people do. There are some people here today who made a will up 15 years ago or 20 and they haven't reread it lately. And you may even discover, well, I've forgotten I'd named him the executor and he died. So that makes him ineligible. He died. Or he could be incompetent. Or you could change. A lady came to me the other day and she said, I named an executor and boy, he is having marital problems. He's gone to drinking. The judgment is probably shot in that particular case. So we'll get to some reasons that we should change, by the way. Any other question? Yes.
Well, John, what confuses me is we have a will now, but it seems like if you're talking about someone that would have to have money when they die, and the majority of us, I'm sure there are exceptions, but the majority of us do not have the type of money where all this would be involved.
Yes. Well, I think that's a common feeling, and that's one of the reasons that people don't make wills. They think, well, I just don't have enough. And it's true. This is a good thing you can apply to this situation. Everybody should have a will, but everyone may not need a will. And it is true that usually with estates of under $5,000, for instance, you don't even have to admit it to probate. Or maybe the house is the only thing and you've got it in joint ownership. That's okay. And you can solve that problem through joint ownership. By the way, I'll give you some. I wrote down four reasons here why joint ownership may not be satisfactory, by the way, and be used in lieu of a will. And it's true that a lot of people say, well, I just don't have enough. There was another point I wanted to bring up about that. That's the guardianship of the children. There's an important reason in a will, and I'll come to that in just a minute. Yes, the terminology is a little different in some states. They use some different terms. Joint tenancy with rights of survivorship is a term that's commonly used. And then there are two other types of titles that are used along this same line. And the attorney is just what you want to make sure is that you do have the right of survivorship, that the other person has a right of survivorship, so it doesn't have to go through probate. For instance, in a title to a home, it could be that you've got enough value that it has to be admitted to probate, you see, and probate costs will eat into the thing. And this is one of the problems that I've studied my dad's estate very well, which was modest. And in the process, I figured that if any planning, you know, anything, simple planning had been done, there would have been $20,000 saved in the distribution of property. Furthermore, there was a 23% shrinkage. In other words, from what he said, this is what I want to pass, and this is who I want to pass it to, and it lost value of 23%. Now, I know there's some insurance men here, and if you ask an insurance man who's a CLU or studied estate planning, he'll tell you, too, that there's quite a loss along this line in shrinkage, and many estates lose 30 or 40% of their value along the way in distribution.
Is that actual value or paper value?
No, that's actual value. They'll actually, of course, what we are in a sense, we're talking about paper value, but the paper value has to be done by a qualified appraiser. In other words, when that estate tax return is filed and you're talking about land that was maybe bought 20 years ago, you know, the cost was one thing, the value today is another. And Internal Revenue Service will be very, very careful about making sure that value is proper. And so, in a sense, it's a paper value, but it's probably pretty realistic because the Internal Revenue Service will come along and audit it and make sure that it did, you know, they put down a realistic figure on that. Yes, ma'am.
And the insurance would amount to a pretty good amount. After everything paid, the insurance would be major beneficiary. Then it happens to them and you too. What becomes of your money there after the insurance?
If the beneficiaries of insurance have predeceased you, it drops into the estate. And then if you have a will, it is passed on what we call by residue to those people you've named in the will. If you don't have a will, it passes by the laws of descent and distribution for the state. No, it won't go to the state. It'll pass to your relatives through the state. However, if the state can't find any relatives, it'll go to the state. That's pretty remote, though. But, you know, it's surprising. I read of a case, I was looking at the Minneapolis paper recently, and saw a case there where $12,000 needed to be distributed, and they spent $5,000 or $6,000, I have the article right here, trying to find the one heir to that estate. Well, they'd shot 50% of it right there, trying to find the person to which this money belonged. Let me shoot at you just a minute on this executor business. Usually the husband names the wife and the wife names the husband. And in most instances, this is very satisfactory. And you will often say to your wife, now, honey, if something happens to me, go and see Joe Smith. He's knowledgeable in these things and he can advise you and give you help. With others along the line, and here we get into a little more property situations, there are some that need to set up or create in their will a trust agreement, whereby a trustee is actually named. It could be an individual, better be a bank, trust department, who would handle and help and take care of the wife. And usually this comes along, say, planning past 50. And insurance, for instance, may be made payable to that testamentary trust. And then the trustee handles the income from that trust and pays it out to take care of the wife, especially some of the wives who have a little difficulty handling principal sums of money. As a rule of thumb, the estate planners say, you wives outshine us in handling income. You handle a budget just unlike any of the men can do. The men handle the principal better. And so one of the things that happens is that insurance proceeds are dissipated very quickly. And I made this comment recently in a workshop, and I said that I had recently read that 60% of all insurance proceeds are gone 2 years after the death of a husband. Insurance man raised his hand, I'm a CLU, and when he said that, I respect him immediately because I know he studied and worked hard in this field. And he said, Mr. Watts, it's more like 90. And my sister was left in a state of probably in excess of $250,000. Her husband died 2 years and 2 or 3 months ago, and it was heard through the family chain of communications that she's scratching for money. And we think, well, no, there's no problem. But people come along and say, now, Mrs. Brown, I've got just the investment for you, you know, that kind of thing. So we're well advised to plan carefully with an executor and so on along this line. You name each other as executor and so on. Then you name an alternate. And there's some things about that alternate. You need to look at it once in a while. John F. Kennedy was the executor of Robert F. Kennedy's estate. Robert F. Kennedy, of course, John died predeceased Robert Kennedy, and he never changed his main executor. He was not an alternate. He was the main executor. And Robert F. Kennedy, as you know, was an attorney. He didn't expect to die, I guess, and wasn't thinking about it, so he didn't change John. I'm sure if he was a smart attorney, he had an alternate name. But we need to be careful about that. Your executor usually should be a resident of the state in which you reside, where your will is going to be probated. There are some problems if that executor isn't. They can operate in many states. In some states, they can't operate as your executor, unless they maybe be a blood relative. Yes? That's an often asked question by the navigator staff. There's only one way to do that, and that's to go to the attorney that makes up your will and say, now, man, I move. You know, I'm moving all the time. And so he will write that accordingly. Be sure to make sure they let three witnesses sign it, for instance, because some of our states, about 10 or 12 states, require three witnesses, and many states, most only require two. That's one thing that would immediately invalidate your will in the state in which you resided, made your residence, and died, is it was, you know, a two-witnessed will. Another thing you really should do is just breeze into an attorney's office and say, now look, would you just read this and see if it meets the laws of this state? And that's an important thing to do. That executor business could be a point, you know, when it comes along to that. The guardian. Let me make a point on this. I haven't said all I'd like to say about the executor, but I'm perspiring under the time. On the guardian point, you need to name somebody who would fill the place of a parent. This is the image the probate, or if it's in some states it's a probate court, in other states it's a juvenile court, in other states it's a circuit court. But that judge sits there and he decides now who's going to have the children, and you've named somebody that really fills the image of being parents. And this is important. Usually somebody, like it was done here, somebody where you have a mutual agreement. But watch out for not naming relatives who would appear to the court to be qualified, because this irritates them. Many times they think, well, the relatives that are of the same age, the brothers and sisters who seem to have a good stable home, they're the natural situation. They're the natural kind of people to step in and help in this situation. So this can be a problem. And by the way, before I forget to say this, if you do name some friends to be the guardian, you might well talk it over with the wife's mother and the husband's mother and father, too. Let them know what you've done, because then it doesn't come as a shock. Yes?
Is there anything as far as wanting a couple instead of single?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. Yeah, I use that illustration usually, that you don't want to name Lance Corporal Joe Smith, who just left for Vietnam, as a... You know, it'd be better to name... They've got to fit the image of parents. We had a case in San Francisco recently where the mother and father died, and there was a guardian and an alternate guardian couple, and the alternate were really not a good alternate. Don't name anybody in your will that you think, well, I really don't want them, but I'm going to put them down as second choice, because the probate court took the second choice in this case because they were related, and he said, that's more important to me. Well, it wasn't a good situation at all. And it wasn't that. One of our staff recently named a couple that lives overseas. And I get a lot of some wills sent to me and to read. And I read this one and I said, boy, I don't think they'd do that. They're not going to, if that something happens to that couple, they're not going to ship the children over to another continent because it's too much of an adjustment, both ends. So, but they had an alternate that I felt was satisfactory, so I didn't comment to them. Yes.
I
have read that too, that they had to be the guardian sometimes had to be a resident of the state. Not to my knowledge that I know of. Unless any of the rest of you have had that experience with your attorney.
So state don't take care of you.
In a way, they do, but they may not see the important, the reasons we think a lot of times that our children are important. We think of that Christian upbringing and philosophy, and they don't see that so much. They might not see that as a prime factor in this whole thing. Yes, yeah, you could put that in your will, and it would help, because after all, the probate judge, they give a kind of a little shady image of him here. Actually, they're human, but, you know, we have any judges present? I think I could tell you this joke, because our attorney, I mean, all judges are attorneys, usually, and some of them are elected offices in some situations. Since our attorney told me this joke, I guess I could tell you this. He said that the employment in New Jersey was so bad the mafias had to lay off several judges. So if a lawyer told me that, I guess it's all right. Yeah.
When you have a guardian, children under 21, say when the children become 21 or older, does the will have to be changed?
No, excuse me. You're living still. You're still alive, you mean?
Right.
Yes. In that instance, I don't believe you need to change the will, but the children will not come into the picture whatsoever. In other words, when the children reach age 21, they're no longer covered by the situation. And some states, I understand, will give special attention to the wishes of children who are over 14 and under 21. In other words, they get into that, and they can come and say, well, I really would much prefer living with Aunt Susie. And the courts, I understand, will honor that very closely, what the child at age 14. Provided the court says, well, that's a good home, okay. Yes, ma'am.
I have intended to say, if you have a will and you have three witnesses sign it, that you don't have to have an attorney?
No, ma'am. Well, yes, you could type up your own will and have three witnesses sign it. But the caution there, the thing that would be necessary is that you meet the laws of the state of where you're residing. And I personally feel that it's too much risk. I've read Norman Dacey's book, Avoiding Probate, cover to cover, and he has snap-out wills that you can use. And I think he has lots of valuable points. I think he hates attorneys, but I disagree with him on the point. I think that we need to find a competent and preferably a Christian attorney who can help us make sure that when that will is admitted to probate, there's nothing that's going to hang it up and cause everything to go asunder. Yes, in some states they might have to have a notary situation there. Yes, ma'am.
Do I understand
that you're saying that one fifth of one or maybe one half of the state will go to brothers and sisters if the husband dies and there are no children involved? I'm saying that it can. In some states, this is the case in a death without a will. I have a little booklet in my desk, but it's not in my memory what it is. One of the banks in Denver passes out the laws of descent and distribution, and I have that booklet, but I'm not sure just what it is. But if you die without a will, this is one of the problems that could exist. Back in the windowsill, we really should break up for lunch, and I really have covered about 50% of what I like to take time to. I put some of these little blue and white booklets back there about some of the cautions about wills. And you could take some of those, and then, by the way, in this giving through your will, in the back of it is a very handy little fact-finding survey, we call it, and it helps you prepare to see your attorney. So you can write down some of this information ahead of time before you go into the attorney's office. It'll save quite a bit of time, and that's the way they operate, is on time. So if you can, put this business together before you go and see him, this would be a good idea. Another thing I usually do, and I'll just I'll leave it up here. I have another booklet that I send people, and the reason I send it instead of giving it is so I can jog them about their will. In about 30 days, I write you a little note, and I say, don't forget about making your will, and I send a little booklet about wills. And then I do not place your name on a mailing list. That's the last you hear from me. But I'm just reminding you, look, don't forget what you were a little more warmly associated with about a week or two ago or a month ago in Colorado. And then another thing I do is my job is to travel and to counsel and to talk to people. And I'm glad to do so. And if you want me to ever stop by your area, Just put your name and address and the phone number, and I'll call you sometime and see if we can get together and discuss some of these things that I left hanging loose. I'll be down at lunch with you today, and I'm available in the next couple of days if you'd like to chat about anything that I've said or haven't said. I'll be glad to do that. I'm available to serve you. So I'll leave this up here, too. Sorry our time was so short. I think we're dismissed for lunch.